Okay, welcome. My name is Divine. I am a fourth year medical student. Welcome to the 25th episode of the Divine Intervention Podcasts. In today's episode, I'm going to finish up autonomic pharmacology, and hopefully in a future podcast, we can begin on a new section of pharmacology. So let's get going. So last time we sort of rounded out at organophosphate poisoning, right? And we talked about how the pathophysiology of organophosphate poisoning involves the inhibition of acetylcholinesterase. And if acetylcholinesterase is inhibited, your levels of acetylcholine build up, so you get a cholinergic toxidrome. So you get things like being hypotensive, or brain bradycardic, because remember your parasympathetic nervous system sort of like cardio depresses the heart, so you get bradycardia because phase four of the pacemaker potential is going much slower. That slope is reduced by cholinomimetics. You could also get like heart block. You could get like profuse sweating, because remember your sweat glands are under the control of the sympathetic nervous system, but they're under that control with muscarinic acetylcholine receptors. So you get more urination, you could get fecal incontinence. Again, remember your rest and digest state, you're pooping and peeing freely. Okay? And you can also get lacrimation, because remember that's under the purview of cranial nerve 7. And cranial nerve 7 is part of your parasympathetic nervous system. Remember, the parasympathetic nervous system is regarded as cranial sacral outflow. Okay, so the cranial part includes cranial nerves like 3, 7, so 3, right? The oculomotor nerve, 7, the facial nerve, 9, the glossopharyngeal nerve, and 10, the vagus nerve. And we said that you treat organophosphate poisoning with an acetylcholine receptor antagonist, okay, like atropine, and then you try to regenerate that acetylcholinesterase with pyridoxine. Okay, so the next set of drugs we'll talk about, let's talk about the muscarinic receptor agonists. Okay, the muscarinic receptor agonists, I sort of think of them as being in two classes. We have those that directly attack the receptor, so they directly activate the receptor, and then we have those that indirectly activate the receptor. And what do I mean by indirect activation? I mean drugs that inhibit acetylcholinesterase and in so doing increase your levels of acetylcholine. And then if you have increased levels of acetylcholine, you can then activate the muscarinic receptors more. Okay, so one example of so let's talk about the first group, the acetylcholinesterase inhibitors. The first group I'll talk about is a nerve gas, right? So sarin. Sarin, again, works by inhibiting acetylcholinesterase, so you can get a cholinergic toxidrome from that. Same thing with organophosphates. Okay, organophosphates, the acetylcholinesterase inhibitors, so those boost your acetylcholine levels. We've talked about how you treat that. And then if a patient has myasthenia gravis, right, because again, I don't just want to give you drug names, right, I want to show you how you'll be tested. If a patient has myasthenia gravis, right, you'll want to, the pathophysiology there involves having autoantibodies against the acetylcholine receptor. So you want to try to fix that by creating acetylcholine that can outcompete those aberrant autoantibodies, right? So you do that by giving an acetylcholinesterase inhibitor like pyridostigmine. So remember that in myasthenia gravis, right, usually they'll say, oh, what's your first step in management or diagnosis? And back in the day was, oh, like get the tensilin test or whatever. They may still describe it as an experiment or whatever on step one, but in general right now the diagnostic test of choice is checking for the anti-acetylcholine receptor antibodies. Okay, so that's the preferred diagnostic test these days, but you can still go with the tensilin test where you administer edrofonium, which is an acetylcholinesterase inhibitor. It's a very short acting acetylcholinesterase inhibitor. Okay, and your levels of acetylcholine are built up, and that transiently improves the symptoms in myasthenia gravis. Now neostigmine and neostigmine is another acetylcholinesterase inhibitor. Classically, it's used to treat like post-op ileus, right? So after you undergo surgery with anesthetics, your GI tract may be locked up for a bit. You could try to fix that problem by given something that encourages your GI tract to go, like neostigmine. You build up your acetylcholine levels. And remember, acetylcholine promotes pooping and peeing, because that's part of the under the purview of the parasympathetic nervous system. Now, if a person has Alzheimer's disease, right, they have reduced levels of what neurotransmitter? They have reduced levels of acetylcholine, okay? So, there are certain things you want to know with acetylcholine in relation to Alzheimer's. So, one thing you want to know is that first, the region of the brain where acetylcholine is produced, okay, they occasionally love to test that that region of the brain is destroyed in Alzheimer's disease, right? So, the acetylcholine is actually produced at a structure called the basal nucleus of Meynert, okay? So, destruction of the basal nucleus of Meynert is associated with an acetylcholine deficiency, if you may, which is associated with the pathophysiology of Alzheimer's. Another more advanced way they can test the same concept is to say that, oh, Alzheimer's is associated with reduced activity of choline acetyltransferase. Remember, choline acetyltransferase is the rate-limiting enzyme for acetylcholine synthesis. So, in Alzheimer's, if you know that you have an acetylcholine deficiency, you want to try to fix that, right, by doing something that boosts your acetylcholine levels. This is, again, where an acetylcholinesterase inhibitor comes into play, right? So, the drugs that are approved by the FDA for acetylcholinesterase inhibition in the treatment of Alzheimer's, okay, include drugs like donepezil. Donepezil is an acetylcholinesterase inhibitor. Galantamine is another acetylcholinesterase inhibitor. Rivastigmine is another acetylcholinesterase inhibitor. And then there is one more that's not so common, tacrine. Tacrine is also an acetylcholinesterase inhibitor that's used to treat Alzheimer's. And remember that patients with Down syndrome are at increased risk of early Alzheimer's, right? Because they have three copies of that presenilin gene on chromosome 21. Okay. So those are the big things you want to know about your acetylcholinesterase inhibitors. Now let's go to the direct muscarinic receptor agonists. Okay, so these include drugs like bethanycol. Bethanycol is a muscarinic receptor agonist. You can use it for post-op ileus. Now, what if you get a question about a lady, like in her 30s, that has dental caries and she feels like a lump in her throat and she says, oh, I have to get up at night multiple times to drink water because my tongue gets dry. Well, hopefully that helps you think about Sjogren's. Remember, Sjogren's is associated with anti-RO or anti-SSA or anti-LA or anti-SSB antibodies. You can treat Sjogren's, the dryness, with a pilocarpine, okay? Pilocarpine. Pilocarpine is a muscarinic receptor agonist that can help you make more saliva. And remember that pilocarpine can also be used in the treatment of acute angle closure glaucoma, okay? Because you want to try to relieve pressure through those canals of Schlemm. So you can do that by causing pupillary constriction. And you can use a muscarinic receptor agonist like pilocarpine for that. And just real quick, while we're on the topic of Sjogren's, don't forget that they had increased risk of a non-Hodgkin's B-cell, a non-Hodgkin's B-cell lymphoma from the overactivation of lymphoid cells in their salivary glands, for example. Now, the last direct muscarinic agonist I want to talk about, is methacholine, okay? Methacholine is a muscarinic receptor agonist that is used in provocative testing for asthma. So, big things you want to know are that if you activate your sympathetic nervous system, you open up your airways, okay? And you can sort of think about that teleologically, if you may, because think about it. If you're running from a lion, you want as much energy as possible to make that happen, okay? And to get more energy, more ATP in oxidative phosphorylation, you need oxygen. So, if your airways are open up some more, right, you can get in more oxygen, you can promote your electron transport chain and oxidative phosphorylation, and you survive, okay? So, activating your sympathetic nervous system opens up your airway, okay? But activating your parasympathetic nervous system closes your airway. That is why albuterol, which is a beta 2 receptor agonist, is used in the treatment of asthma. And ipratropium or tiotropium, which are muscarinic receptor antagonists, are used in the treatment of asthma, okay? So, if you want to have a provocative test for asthma. You actually give a muscarinic receptor agonist like methacholine. In general, you use pretty dilute concentrations. And in most people, when you give them those dilute concentrations, they don't get much in the way of bronchospasm with that. But in a person that has hypersensitive airways, you give them those dilute concentrations of methacholine, you get bronchoconstriction, the person's FEV1 decreases by some percentage, and there are some cutoffs for the diagnosis of asthma, okay? So you have like a standardized decrease in FEV1, and you're like, oh, this person has asthma, and then you sort of go from there, okay? So methacholine can be used in provocative testing for asthma. Now, let's talk about the muscarinic receptor antagonists. We've sort of talked about these already. Atropine, remember, you can use that for heart block, okay? Because by blocking muscarinic receptors, it will increase the speed of conduction through the AV node. And for atropine, right, if you're exposed to ginseng weed, you could get an anticholinergic toxidrome from atropine, okay? And the way you treat an atropine overdose, remember, atropine is a muscarinic receptor antagonist, right? So again, you want to try to boost your levels of acetylcholine to outcompete atropine at the muscarinic receptor. So you do that with a drug known as physostigmine. Physostigmine is an acetylcholinesterase inhibitor that boosts your levels of acetylcholine to overcome an atropine overdose. Scopolamine is another muscarinic receptor antagonist. You primarily use it for motion sickness. So too much acetylcholine in your vestibular system causes a lot of vestibular symptoms, motion sickness symptoms, seasickness symptoms. So you can treat that by blocking acetylcholine receptors. That's why you see many people, they take Benadryl or diphenhydramine for motion sickness, because diphenhydramine has, yes, it's an antihistamine, but it has very powerful muscarinic receptor blocking activity. And then ipratropium, tiotropium, they are also muscarinic receptor antagonists. Use those more for asthma and COPD, okay? Ipratropium is a shorter acting muscarinic antagonist. Tiotropium is longer acting. And the easy way to remember that is I comes before T in the alphabet, okay? So I comes early, so it's short acting. T comes later, so it's long acting. So let's round out this discussion by talking about the three types of incontinence. They love to really test this in the context of the parasympathetic nervous system, okay? So the first one we'll talk about is urge incontinence. It's the one called overactive bladder. This is something you could potentially find on exams in a patient with multiple sclerosis, okay? So in this case, the detrusor muscles are too active, okay? So they are working too well, okay? So these people, like, they can't get to the restroom before they pee on themselves, okay? So because your detrusor muscles are working too well, okay, and remember, your parasympathetic nervous system makes you pee, you can try to reverse that pathology by blocking muscarinic receptors, okay? So actually, muscarinic receptor antagonists are very good in the treatment of urge incontinence, okay? And there's a nice mnemonic you'll learn as you study for step one. It's called sitting on the darn toilet for the muscarinic receptor antagonists that are classically used in the treatment of urge incontinence. So we have drugs like sulfafenacin, okay? We have oxybutynin, that's the O. We have tolterodine. We have darifenacin, and then we have trospium, okay? So sitting on the darn toilet. Those are the muscarinic receptor antagonists that are used for urge incontinence. Now, if you're dealing with overflow incontinence, right? So overflow incontinence, the detrusor muscles are basically not doing anything because the nerves in your bladder, they can't detect when the bladder is full for some reason. And again, this is something that may potentially be found in a patient with a history of multiple sclerosis. So for this, because your bladder nerves are like not detecting anything, so you're holding on to pee, okay? So these people, they usually like pee in like small spurts when the pressures in the bladder are just too much, where they just have to let out some urine. So you can try to treat that either with like self-catheterization, or you can also give a muscarinic receptor agonist, okay, to encourage pee, because again, you're not sensing anything, so you want to encourage pee by giving a muscarinic receptor agonist like bethanycol. Okay, so notice different kinds of incontinence but different kinds of treatments. Okay, so for urge incontinence, you give a muscarinic receptor antagonist. For overflow incontinence, you give a muscarinic receptor agonist. And then the final one, stress incontinence, basically, let's assume you've basically wrecked a lot of your pelvic floor muscles in the context of like multiple childbirths. Okay, the classic presentation is a patient that has that pees on themselves when they have an increase in intra-abdominal pressure, right? So if they laugh or if they perform any kind of Valsalva-ish maneuver, okay, anything that increases intra-abdominal pressure increases the loss of urine under those cases. So the way you treat that, you don't necessarily jump to pharmacology. You can use Kegel exercises, okay, and then you can do surgery if Kegel exercises don't work. So this is basically where I'm going to stop with autonomic pharmacology. We're pretty much done. I'll just do a very quick review of like some very high yield things we talked about along the way. So remember that in pheochromocytomas, right, you want to block alpha receptors first before you block beta receptors. And those alpha receptors, you can block them with like phenoxybenzamine. It's an irreversible alpha one receptor blocker. Phentolamine is a reversible alpha one receptor blocker. So be able to think of those in the context of Michaelis-Menten kinetics. And then if a patient has like BPH and concomitant hypertension, right, you want to treat that with an alpha one blocker like prazosin or doxazosin. Remember, tamsulosin was the one that was selective for the alpha one AD receptors that you find in the bladder. And then clonidine, right? Remember, it's an alpha 2 agonist, usually to treat hypertension. Remember, alpha 2 receptors are GI coupled, so they decrease the release of norepinephrine. So you could use it to treat hypertension, but you want to be wary of a side effect. If you stop the drug, the hypertension comes back in like very full force. Okay, so rebound hypertension is a very big side effect of clonidine. You could actually use clonidine to treat clonidine in the treatment of Tourette's syndrome. It's just one of those bizarre things you want to know for your exam. And then propranolol, right? So propranolol is a beta 1 and 2 receptor blocker, okay? Remember, it's used in thyroid storm because, one, it helps with the hyperadrenergic symptoms, but propranolol also inhibits the 5' deiodinase that converts T4 to T3. And in thyroid storm, we said in addition to using propranolol, right, you can use steroids, okay? You can use PTU. Remember, PTU is a thyroperoxidase inhibitor, but it also inhibits that 5' deiodinase. And then nimodipine. I'm just throwing this in here. If a person has like a hemorrhagic stroke, like after a subarachnoid hemorrhage, and they say, oh, worst headache of your life, or a thunderclap headache, or a headache that is different in character from previous headaches, you can give nimodipine. It's a dihydropyridine calcium channel blocker that prevents post-hemorrhagic stroke vasospasm, okay, so that they don't get an ischemic stroke after a hemorrhagic stroke. And then if you want to delay delivery, right, you want to give a beta 2 agonist, because remember, beta 2 receptors increase cyclic AMP, and in smooth muscle that causes a relaxation, okay. So if a patient has you're trying to delay delivery for some reason, let's say for like preterm labor, you can give a beta 2 agonist like terbutaline or ritodrine. They're tocolytics and they can delay delivery. Now for anaphylaxis, right, don't forget that your drug of choice is epinephrine, okay, because in anaphylaxis you want to affect beta 2 receptors to open up airways, okay. Remember, norepinephrine won't do squat for you in anaphylaxis, right, because it does not necessarily activate beta 2 receptors. But if a person is in septic shock, norepinephrine, great, okay, because again, it's a powerful alpha 1 receptor agonist, so that helps you in septic shock because it sort of increases your systemic vascular resistance to counteract the severe vasodilation. And then dobutamine, right, remember, it's a beta 1 agonist. You can use it in an acute CHF exacerbation, okay. You could also use it in a cardiac stress test. We talked about milrinone. That is a phosphodiesterase 3 inhibitor, so it builds up your levels of cyclic AMP. So we talked about how that helps your cardiac muscle contract better, so it's a positive inotrope, okay, but that causes smooth muscle relaxation, okay, so it's also a vasodilator, right, so it's an inodilator, if you may. And then we talked about pilocarpine in the context of synthesis of saliva for Sjogren's and also for the treatment of acute angle closure glaucoma. And then we talked about fixing an atropine overdose with physostigmine, okay, that's an acetylcholinesterase inhibitor. And then ecothiophate, it's an acetylcholinesterase inhibitor, it's just one of those weird drugs that just sort of put that in your memory bank as another acetylcholinesterase inhibitor. We talked about hydrofonium, use it in the tensilin test for the diagnosis of myasthenia gravis. And then Homotropin, cyclopentolate, and tropicamide. These are all actually muscarinic receptor antagonists that are used for dilated eye exams, right? Because remember, if you activate your parasympathetic system, you get meiosis. So if you block it, you get mydriasis. Back in the day, people used to use atropine, but atropine sort of takes forever to wash out of your system. So they invented these short-acting drugs, okay? Homotropine sort of sounds like atropine, right? Tropicamide, cyclopentolate, they are all short-acting muscarinic receptor antagonists. And then midodrine is a vasoactive agent. It causes vasoconstriction. It tenses up your blood vessels. Okay, it's actually used for the treatment of dysautonomia. Okay, where a person has like very labile or I guess unstable blood pressures based on changes in position. So I think that's where I'm gonna stop. Next time we'll pick up with another branch of pharmacology or a different subject, but we'll keep marching through pharmacology as we go along in the coming weeks. So have a wonderful day and stay blessed. Thank you.